Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
You're going to teabag fight.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's The Session. Here we are, live shutdown special. We're still shut down, but I think we're sort of ramping up to not be shut down, to be non-shutdown soon. And I don't know if I'm looking forward to that.
It's too smoky to go outside anyways. We'll still be stuck in here. It's for different reasons.
Yeah. Man, this is the worst. It's just the worst. It's like being dumped 400 times in a row because you have to stay.
Whoa.
And then you can, you know, okay, well, we can go outside at least so you can take walks. Well, no, it's going to be 100 degrees for 4 years. And then it's going to be really smoky. And then it's going to be cool, but smoky. And then it's going to be cool for a day and then smoky again. And it's just, you can't win for losing in this area, man. But we're still here. We're drinking beer. We're hanging out with Lee from Party Beer Company in L.A., beautiful Los Angeles. Lee, how you doing?
Hey.
Doing all right. Thank you very much.
It's good to see you, man. I haven't seen you.
Good to be seen.
In forever, it feels like. Far too long.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember last time we'd say guys pre-pandemic, but I think it had already been a little while. But I'm pretty much still in March, so maybe it hasn't been that long. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, there was March 14th, 15th, 16th, 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 16th in a row. Yeah.
Like March 240 something.
Yeah.
No, I lost track. For a while I was actually trying to keep track, but yeah.
Yeah, it's we were talking just briefly before going live about, you know, the topic of every conversation, right, is how shitty of a year 2020 has been. And I mean, I think it's going to get shittier, but it's
It's about, it's impending. We're not out of it by any means.
No. And it's like you can't do a single thing. You can't do a single thing. And it just gets worse. And then now today I read someone assaulted Rick Moranis on the street.
I saw that.
Just sucker punched Rick Moranis in the head and
numerous hats for his hat.
I'm done. That's it.
Like, I don't get it. I don't understand what's happening right now. Rick Moranis,
of all the people,
agreed to come back to acting.
Pick on.
Right. And like he took a break from acting because his wife, I think, passed away a couple
years
ago.
Yeah, I think there was like a whole, he basically like raised the kids and did the whole.
Yeah.
Did the right thing.
He's done. Right. Exactly. And then he just got, I think, I want to say, one of the, Ryan, who plays Deadpool? Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
I think he got him back into acting or something like that, whatever. But he's like,
he was going to come back for like a new Honey, I Shrunk the whatever. And and then now this happened.
So we, and it was seriously because somebody wanted to steal his hat.
Yeah, it was apparently like this one guy, and he did it to somebody else, or supposedly, COVID. And they're trying to hunt this guy down. I mean, he's just a wackadoodle, pulled him off the bus, tried to grab his hat, and then bit his arm or something.
I didn't bit him. See that at all.
Yeah, this is not anyway. A time for biting. No biting.
No biting.
Yeah, and the bath salts were like 15 years ago, guys. Come on, man.
That's right.
To move on.
Yeah, so...
Maybe that's the cure. Maybe we need are some bath salts.
Damn. I think we should...
No, they didn't. The bath salts didn't work for Donald Trump. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. No. That was bleach. No.
Dude, went right there. Went straight there.
Right there. Right there. We just lost half the audience. Half the audience.
1 minute, 30 seconds in.
Done.
Well, look, man, before we get to Lee and all of his tasty beer, which I'm enjoying already, the Taco Cerveza. So if you want to support the show, please do. You can become a regular donor through PayPal. Don't ask me how to do that. I'm sure it's all on the website. You can do all your shopping on Amazon. That link is definitely on there on the website, and that helps out a little bit too. And if you want a little bit more beer content in your day-to-day, Justin is currently on the road right now heading towards GABF. In fact, I think he might actually be there. He's going to be covering the judging, the setup over there, and how they're going to be doing the award ceremony. He's producing the award ceremony. So we're all going to get to see our favorite breweries up there, winning awards virtually. And Jay's producing some content from the road. I know he's hitting a couple breweries. So check that out too. I know he went to Sierra Nevada, and I think he went to Firestone Walker. Can't remember. But anyway, those videos are up on our YouTube channel. So check those out if you can. We're joined here by Nate, of course, and Sully. And it's good to see both of you as well.
Thank you. Good to be here.
The Zoom thing is weird, man, but it's a good proxy, I suppose. For the real thing.
Better than nothing.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I prefer to smell you guys, but.
Yeah, see, this is way better. I haven't had a shower in days.
I mentioned the D&D game we had going over Zoom with some parents from my kids' preschool, or I guess former preschool. And it's weird, but I got to thinking, there's no way that, like, parents with kids the age we could not have gotten together in person, even if there was no pandemic, to play D&D. So... it's kind of cool that we're actually getting to do something we never could do in a million years otherwise. So as strange it is, I guess I won't knock it completely.
You know, that is...
They're okay with COVID is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, COVID, it's okay.
Yeah. It's an interesting point because that is sort of like the silver lining, is that you find the time to reach out to people and connect with people in ways that you normally wouldn't. Like, I started a D&D game with my friends as well. And we normally wouldn't have had the time to do that. It's basically the same story, but minus preschool. You know, because there's always something you could be doing, but you do almost need more of a break from your family now.
It is a good, I mean, maybe it makes you reevaluate your like busyness, because, you know, you're always too busy to do anything.
Maybe. You know, but isn't one of those things, like, I actually did a lot of Zoom stuff to begin with. Like, everybody was gung-ho about it. I was like, this is really, you know, novel. Let's do this. And then it's kind of waned off a little bit. Now it's like, I mean, I sort of keep in touch with those people in the same way. But a lot of times the calls begin like what we're doing right now, where we just talk about COVID, and then it gets into this like, and you're like, I got to go. I'm burning the water. I got to go, you know, like, you know, it's just, you know, I don't know. But this, you know, this is fun, guys.
People get fatigue and they burned out on that stuff really quick. Yeah. I think it's, everyone was overdoing it in the beginning. But yeah, you have to be more deliberate now to go and see people like this as much as you can see them, because you're not going to run into people anywhere. Like, I'm not going to go to Triple Rock and see you, or like happen to go to some other brewery or something and see my friends. Yeah, like,
I used to, like, I swear up and down that I hated beer festivals and beer events. But then I realized, well, not only am I not seeing people that I like to bump into occasionally, but also, like, there's people's jobs who essentially, you know, like,
yeah,
people who run Brewers Guild, people who run the Brewers Association, et cetera. Like, suddenly there's that huge revenue stream is gone. Like, guess what? Those jobs are gone.
Yeah.
That's awful. So,
yeah, it's pretty sad. Speaking of, like, GABF, it's amazing that there even is going to be some virtual event because I know a lot of those folks. It's a different organization now than it was 6 months ago. They put it that way.
I mean, do you know what they're doing as far as the awards show goes? I mean, like, are they going to just? I mean, because we sent out our beers a while ago, and I think they're being judged right now. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's been spread out over a pretty good chunk of time.
That's what I saw. I saw Jay Brooks post something where it was like they were all like, he'd been there for 2 weeks or something crazy. So.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I think it's a 2 week judging time. Just, and I'm gleaning this just from what Jay's talking about.
Yeah.
He used to be in Denver for 2 weeks to, you know, shoot some video and give us access to how that actually is happening, which is,
oh, that's good.
Crazy. Yeah. And we've talked about this on a homebrew scale on Dr. Homebrew a couple shows ago, where we had the guys from Club Doze, you know, the local club out here. And they were talking about how they did the first round. They're like, they're almost like first responders, right? We had a duty to perform this thing.
We're going in.
Everybody band together.
Yeah, but they went, they did a good job. And obviously, I mean, I think no one got COVID and people.
Honestly, like if there's anybody that could like nerd out and do it right, it would be like some dedicated homebrewers. Cause they're like doing everything by the book.
Head down, like mask.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, I mean, like, it's funny, but at the same time, I'm sure they did an outstanding job. So
yeah, I think so too. I mean, and just hearing it anyway, you can go back and listen. But I think at GABF, I think they're doing a little bit more than that because we know a little bit more about the virus. And you know, look, brewers are getting up there in age. Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't invited to judge this year. Very suspicious.
I think because you're too old.
Wait, what'd you say? I can't hear you. What'd you say?
They heard you coughing at the beginning of the show, you know? And so from that point forward, they just put a red X next to Sean O'Sullivan's name.
Ixnay on Sully A.
Yeah.
They're like, no, he's too big of a risk factor here.
I don't know. That's fine. I guess that's what happens. You know, you get older and then you don't judge anymore.
Yeah. Then they haul you out as a showpiece. Like, look what you can achieve.
And here he is.
Yeah,
it's almost like, the old beer judge.
Almost like what the Running Man or whatever. You're a gladiator for so long, you eventually get to retire. Yeah. Whenever really makes it that far.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, I'll have to watch that movie tonight.
All right, Lee. You know, longtime session listeners will remember you from Eagle Rock. One of the best, most outstanding breweries in LA. And I love stopping there every time we went to Disneyland. It's my favorite. It was like my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, I feel like for a minute there, we were seeing you guys like almost on a monthly basis. It was pretty frequent.
Yeah.
You got a kid.
And then we sort of was like, oh my God.
Slow down a little.
Yeah, we got to slow down. Man, we got to stop doing this. Recently you moved jobs, you left Eagle Rock and you went to Party Beer. How does somebody pull you away? I mean, you helped open Eagle Rock, right?
Lead dog. I mean, actually my brother and I, and Eric, who you know as well, I mean, we had sort of been around from the beginning. We met Jeremy and Ting pretty early on in their startup process, and we just kind of I blame you guys. Like, we had been homebrewing a lot. We had been listening to the Brewing Network. You're like, oh, wait, you know, you can make this more than a hobby. Like, this could be a thing. Sure, why not? So we
sucker.
We left perfectly good, you know, paying jobs. And it was something we wanted to do. So we kind of like, you know, we were there all the time. So I did that for a long time. And you know, we still remain good friends. There's no like weird blood or anything there, but, you know, I don't want to say I had like done everything I could possibly accomplish there, but you know, like I'd been there for a while. We were kind of on a trajectory that was kind of slow and steady. But in the meantime, a really good friend of mine from the original homebrew club I was in, which was Pacific Gravity, this guy named Bob, he was working with some guys at they're essentially like a sort of like a media company. They did a lot of stuff for KitchenAid, for example. The guy that owned that company and another guy kind of like they were college buddies, and it was sort of their dream to like, you know, have a brewery someday, like to do a thing together.
Sure.
And, you know, one went on to do this media company. The other went on to do a ton of like bar and restaurant and like cocktail programs, things of that nature. So I sort of got introduced to those guys through this mutual friend who was sort of working for them, and found essentially I was sort of helping him. Like, he would just randomly ask me questions about like, well, what equipment do we need? Or, you know, what do we, how do we do this? Or what do we do for that? And I kind of got more and more interested. Like, it sort of got to the point where I was like, well, wait, like, tell me more about this thing. Like, this sounds kind of cool. Eventually kind of met and hung out with the guys. Oh, sorry. I don't know if you can hear
that. Pressure.
I could have turned that off, but,
not that bad.
If we go on a break, I'll turn it off.
Okay.
Anyway, I kind of got to know the guys involved, and it sounded really like sort of fun and interesting and different. They're definitely into like curating a really like good vibe, and they just want to make a fun place to hang out.
Okay.
One of the guys has a bar in Highland Park called Block Party, and obviously it looks a little bit different right this minute compared to pre-pandemic, but
sure.
I think one thing they've been really smart about is making a space that is like fun for everyone. And I kind of feel like we've evolved out of the like warehouse with the refrigerator with taps in the side. And like, that's the experience. This is kind of more of I don't want to say it's like a designer experience, but a lot of thought has gone into like what it looks like, how comfortable it is, to whom does it appeal? Like, it's not just like the Hawaiian shirt homebrew club guys. You know what I mean? It's like
me. It's Jason.
Yeah.
Like that guy. Yeah. they've been really smart about it.
Well, here, hold on a second. Let me interrupt you because you've touched on a lot of points that I want to hit. But the one you're talking about right now, it almost seems like, the industry knows now that if you have enough money, that you should put it into the design elements rather than anything else. I know there's always plussing you can do, and people are looking for, there's so many breweries, you want to create a space rather than,
you know,
well, we I, have the equipment.
A unique space is different from everybody else. Exactly.
Yeah.
mean, there was certainly a time like 10 or definitely like 15 years ago where like the ultimate goal was to make really good beer, but like that was the finish line, where now like that's the starting line and you got to worry about all this other stuff. Like, I mean, even just think about what beer looked like on the shelf. I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, like there was a lot of bad, like really bad looking.
Labels.
Looked like somebody was Photoshopped for about 10 minutes, just kind of slopping it together.
Well, like,
and we cared so much about the product, we weren't really even looking that close. No, we didn't care.
That's all that mattered. It didn't matter what the outside of the container looked like. It was the contents. But I think, maybe there's parallels to like wine and the sheer amount of wine that's on the shelves. Like, I don't know that much about wine. So if I'm shopping, I'm probably going to buy the one that looks cool.
I'm looking at labels, dude.
Because I don't I may like sort of hone in on like a style or a varietal, whatever, but I don't know. So it definitely, like, it's, I guess I'll say matured a lot, in the last 10, 20
years. It's definitely become a business. And I mean, back in the day, you could throw beer at a wall and people might buy it, because it was novel and unique. And then people, you started realizing maybe there's an aspect to this that we need to step up a little bit. And so, and now there's so many of us. I think your comment about like, the starting line right now is that you have to have good beer because what I'm hearing from your place is that, you've got this unique opportunity, this space that, you're trying to curate and like make it exciting and fun and get people in there, because that's what you have to do. I mean, the old saying is that people, buy for the package and come back for the liquid is kind of like, what's happening right now in a lot of ways.
No, totally. I mean, it's like you sort of like it. You have to put on this like experiential, it's like a little Disneyland, part of our pre-pandemic plan is essentially there's no indoor space at this brewery aside from like, the brew house. Everything, the entire tap room is a beer garden. It's all outside. But there was also going to be mini golf, just a couple, like three holes of mini golf and stuff like that. Like it,
Only three? Only three? Come on. Give well, me some I mean, more. No, I'm just kidding. You need some room for the humans,
too. But, yeah. And, you can play, so, you can play three, drink a beer, play three, drink a beer.
Yeah. There you go. It's like a mandate.
It'll get more challenging as you...
Can we play through?
It's sort of the idea that, like, you sort of have to put on a song and dance now. Like, it's not enough to just... Yeah.
It has to be enough of an experience, right?
I mean, like, you know, like just in this area alone, and LA, I think, was kind of slow to have a beer scene compared to San Diego and the Bay Area. But there's a ton of good beer up here now. I mean,
absolutely.
You are the ground floor. Eagle Rock.
Like, there's a ton of great beer. I mean, like world class beer. So,
well, yeah, you were on that ground floor with Eagle Rock. I mean, you guys kicked off that whole good beer revolution in the LA region. So you more than anybody have seen it grow and mature and change now into this. It is sort of, you have to align more with marketing. And I feel like in the early days of beer, marketing bad, you know, you just tell your story and that's all you got to do.
Rebelling or revolting against all of that. You're like, no, we don't pay for advertising. Like, what do you,
right?
No. The only brewery I knew that paid for advertising was the 21st Amendment.
No, please.
No, I'm kidding. No, it was like, no, we don't have a marketing.
Could you say that name again a few more times, though? So I can like,
well, speaking of cans, that's all we do because.
That's right, cans.
maybe we're not ready to segue into that yet, but I do want to talk to you guys about like what everybody is allowed to do up there. Versus what we're allowed to do down here at the moment. But
okay. All right.
We are currently putting zero beer in kegs. So I'm trying to like figure out from like kettle to fermenter to bright tank how to have no leftover beer and no leftover cans. And that's really fun. and of course, it's a little different for, you know, Pilsner is easy. Hazy IPA, that's not so easy.
Are you printing your cans or putting a label on them or what are you doing?
We've been doing sleeved cans. I kind of wish we were doing like labeled cans so that I could just have a big pile of bright cans. And, you know, it's a lot easier to store labels than it is to store. Cause
cheaper too,
yeah. The issue we have now, since we're not doing any draft, is like I've got all these leftover cans. But it's like it's not enough to do a whole run, but I've got like two layers of this brand and three layers of this. So at some point I think – we'll just do like a Hail Mary and just brew some weird beer and put stickers, you know, just sticker over all the 18 different leftover remnant cans that we have.
Yeah.
We're doing the same up here. I mean, we're like, you know, everybody's pivoted to package. I mean, there's the draft businesses. Like, I mean, we're starting to see a little uptick in it because, you know, some places are have opened and asked for draft. But I mean, the same way. I mean, we were lucky that way because we didn't have a lot of draft sales, which I actually couldn't stand. We sold a lot of our beer in grocery stores and da da da.
Yeah.
But now after it happened, I was like, oh, thank God, because, you know, we were able to pivot and be okay with that.
Maybe. That ended up being a good position to be in because it's not so much of a, I mean, a lot of breweries did so much draft or like, you know, the one I wonder a lot about up here in our neck of the woods is Craftsman in Pasadena did a hunt, like they did no cans, no bottles. It was draft only. So like, what do you suddenly, and I mean, who knew this was coming, but like draft pretty much turned off in March and that was it.
So, yeah. That's a huge pivot to make.
So, but in terms of like breweries with tap rooms without kitchens, you guys have just been on the like this, like you're allowed to have a food partner and do partial outdoor occupancy or where.
I can speak to the fact we have like, you know, kitchens. We're a bona fide eating establishment, but I mean
at both or just in
both locations. We have like we have a food wagon truck whatever in San Leandro. Yeah. Then we have our restaurant in San Francisco, but I mean we have 13 tables open in San Francisco, and I think it's the beer garden in San Leandro is a lot bigger. But you know, Nathan, you could probably speak to Faction. I mean, Faction had that kind of a little bit of an issue with starting up because they had to partner with a third party food truck or something like that.
Yeah, they always are bringing in food trucks, much like a lot of other breweries that don't have a kitchen on site or a permanent food truck kind of in residence. But yeah, I think the restriction is that you have to have a food truck there, some kind of a food and beverage situation going on. You can't just serve people beers at the moment, right? There has to be some kind of, and I'm not sure how the rules work in terms of like, I think there's limits on if you're at a table with X number of people, maybe there needs to be food ordered along with beverages, but I'm not sure on the details of that, but you have to at least have the food option there. And I think there's even some, it's a, apparently some quotas around like what tables have to do. What is it like in LA? What are the restrictions?
Well, it just changed like 2 days ago, but you know, remember when we went from like phase one to phase two and then we went backwards to phase whatever?
Yeah.
At that point, the LA County Health Department said no. So a ton of breweries, when it was announced that you could have a food partner and you could have some limited dine-in, everybody went out and bought every picnic table they could find and every umbrella they could find. 2 weeks later to be shut down by the health department, and they would not budge at all. So we're lucky. We have a really good Brewers Guild, like super organized. And that's actually going back to the idea of festivals being canceled. Like our Brewers Guild has one full-time employee, Franny, and
She's great.
Because we can't have any of the events that like pay her salary. But the guild worked really, really hard, figured out how to get in front of the right people and, you know, how to do the right messaging. So as of like 2 days ago, finally they said, all right, we're going to let you open back up with a food partner and do that partial. Uh-huh. We've been doing to go only because we haven't been allowed to do anything else. And we can't do it yet. Like there's still some guidelines that have to come down and a few things that have to happen. But in theory, within a week or two, we'll finally be able to have that sort of limited occupancy thing. And I don't mean to like, I'm not making light of the situation. Like I realize that the first priority is public health.
Yeah. There's a reason. So
I'm not trying to get a bunch of drunken like bozos in here and create, but at the same time, like, we were in kind of a good spot when all this happened, but I know a ton of other breweries were not. And like, they need to sell some beer to some people really soon or else they're just not going to be a brewery anymore. So, yeah, it's been kind of, been kind of wild down here.
Yeah. Especially if there's rules and they're well implemented and they can be handled in an outdoor space with some social distancing and so forth. I think that breweries that were only draft or mostly draft can get some of that revenue back a little bit. I mean, people who had not invested in packaging were in a pretty tough situation.
Oh yeah. No,
into this, you're right?
Stuck, you know, you've got like beer you can't sell, beer at accounts that they're not selling. You know, what do you do? So, and I mean, back to like my comment earlier about like the NHC judging and like homebrewers doing things right. If I trust anybody to get the safety thing right, it's probably breweries with tap rooms. Like everyone's already used to, you know, treading lightly and following the rules because, you know, you don't want the ABC to come down on you and you don't want the health department to come. So everybody's already used to doing a good job.
Rule following. Yeah.
I think you sort of have a group of people that are for the most part fairly conscientious. So like, I think everybody wants to do the right thing. And I sort of trust breweries more than restaurants or the bars to like actually get it right. In fact, they may err on the side of overdoing it, but you know, anyhow,
that's for the best.
Yeah. We've been given the green light to 25% occupancy inside. And so we've been working at that in the pub in San Francisco. And it's like, and first of all, when we shut down, we just like started cleaning and refurbishing everything. So we took advantage of the time and we were able to hire some people back for that, which was great. But like right now, I mean, the conversations I'm having with the GM, Rob Strausser over there is that, I mean, we are thinking about I mean, it is so hardcore. I mean, it's not even because we got to do it. It's almost like we think about safety constantly, just about the staff and about the customer. Because if you get shut down, it's like, you know, if somebody gets something, that's it. And we had to shut down for 2 weeks at the beginning of this thing because we had an outside contractor come in to work on our glycol chiller, and he was sick. And so we shut down. I got a COVID test. Everybody got COVID tests. Everybody was fine, but just don't want that to happen. You don't want anybody to get sick, too. I mean, aside from I don't even care about the revenue side. It's just I don't want people to get sick and, you know, something bad happens. So, Lee, I completely agree with you. It's just like we're like, you know, I think we might overthink it because we have to and because we're used to doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's a fair amount of folks out there with a very like cavalier attitude towards the personal safety thing. And like
100%. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that'll bite you in the ass or maybe not, but I don't want it to be my fault if something happens to somebody. I mean, cause you know, it'd be one thing if we were in a scenario where, if you didn't follow the rules, you were the only one that would be affected. But that's not the case. If you go out and do something dumb, then maybe you come home and give it to your grandparents, and then you give it to all your coworkers, and then you do it. Like, it's not fair. So, yeah, I think you kind of do have to overreact. And at the same time, it's hard because you're also trying to sustain a business. I mean, what is 25% occupancy? Like, does that even, like, pay the rent, or is that... I mean,
we figured it out. I mean, you know, with outdoor seating and that, I mean, we have to, you know, we have to hit a certain amount every day in order to make it work. And, you know, it's like, you know, some days it doesn't happen and some days it does. Some days we're doing better, but you know, we've worked with the owner of the building and, you know, we just feel like we have to do this. So.
No, I agree. I do. I mean, I feel like, and this is not my original thought. I heard it somewhere that, you know, you'll never know it if you overdo it, but you'll certainly know it if you underdo it.
Yeah.
So I'll err on the side of overdoing it.
Yeah, especially now, man. Like you said, everyone's at risk, man. Even the people who don't even go anywhere near your place.
You know? The thing that blows my mind, and I don't know when this happened, but like, and not to take the conversation here for too long, but the idea of like people that don't want to wear the masks or don't want to do the thing. It's like, when did everybody become so selfish? Like, you honestly don't give a shit about your neighbor or your friend or who, like, I don't know where, like, when that page turned, but like, why is everybody being such a dick? What happened to being nice and doing like good deeds for other people?
Yes.
Well, I agree.
I am the same way. I cannot even, I mean, I hate to virtue signal here, but I really feel like, you know, come on, man, really? You're going to die on the hill of like not wearing your mask. That's it. That's where this ends. I mean, come
literally.
On. It's like,
well, and it's also the same people who are ranting about the economy being closed down. They can't go to the places they want to go, but it's because you're not wearing a mask. That's the main reason. Because people aren't wearing it. You're spreading it around.
If calm down and do it right, then we could probably be doing a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing that it's October and we're still having to have this conversation about how we can't believe these people haven't caught on yet. I think it's
we'll be having this conversation next March or April or whatever. Yeah. Not to like sound like a pessimist, but like,
yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, we got a ways to go. Even if the magical vaccine comes down the pipeline tomorrow, we still got a ways to go. So
for sure.
Maybe it's in beer.
Well, I think we're going to find out.
So far, so good. I'm doing my part.
Oh, man. All right. Let me take a quick break here, everybody, and we'll be right back with Lee from Party Beer Company in L.A. Stay tuned. It's The Session. We'll be back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented.
It's The Session.
Right. Yeah! Come on!
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks a lot. This is The Session. We're hanging out with Lee from Party Beer Company in beautiful L.A., California. And Lee, you were saying earlier that you guys haven't had too much of the smoke, so it is sort of still kind of nice out there, and we have no idea what that looks like.
We had like 2 weeks of like pretty intense like smoke everywhere, cars kind of covered in like that layer of small ash particulate. But it changed direction, and I feel like the last week or two we've had a little bit of a break, so I'm certainly not going to complain. I was going out to some friends that have a brewery in Monrovia. Actually, I had a friend that started a brewery in Monrovia called Hop Secret. That was his like retirement project, and he quickly realized that owning and operating a brewery was like a terrible way to retire. So he found some enthusiastic young guys to like take it over, and I think they're doing a great job.
Nice.
Anyway, I was going out there to get yeast, and the mountains out there were on fire. So I got to see that the 747 super tanker, you know, that drops all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like it flew over the freeway low, and I was like, holy shit, I know what that is. He's going to go, you know. So I kind of like drove slow so I could watch. And yeah, he went, did a big loop around and like dumped all that stuff all over the place. It was kind of beautiful to see it firsthand, but at the same time I'm like, god damn, this is not good.
It seems weird that we're still sort of like plugging along when everything's on fire, you know,
sky's on fire,
like I don't know, like it just, that's how life goes. It's sort of like the same thing with the pandemic, and you know, just about like I said, we were talking earlier about just being stuck at home, and there's now multiple reasons why you can't go outside.
Yeah,
especially in the Bay Area, and it's like it's just we're being piled on, but it's also weird because life is sort of just moving on.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Some of it needs to move on, and some of it's just like you know, like an aircraft carrier. Like you don't just stop the aircraft carrier; like it's so big, it keeps going for a while. So like I think we don't even know how to stop if we
too much walk. Momentum. There's no true. Way to stop it, right?
You know, true. It's like, all right, well, I guess this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all the smoke in the air, man, it's getting in the house. And like, so now today I suddenly have a cough.
It's but COVID. I know it's not you have COVID. COVID. No, maybe it is. Maybe it is, JP.
I haven't been anywhere.
Maybe it is.
I don't
maybe
go
it
is.
You got
I
it
don't
off
go
the,
anywhere.
You got it off the dust. That's tapping I mean, it. It's like really Achilles could, heel there.
God, I wish I could mute you right now.
It's all that wildfire dust raining down upon your house. It's full of COVID, Jason.
COVID dust.
I got it off a milk container or something like that. Anyway, Lee, I'm drinking your California Kolsch. Please tell me about that beer so we can avoid.
So, like, I think that turned out to be a really nice beer. The original idea there was, as you know, like, let's see, what month was this? We had a date with Wild Goose to have somebody come out and commission the machine. And it could only happen at a very specific time. If we missed that deadline, then it was going to be like a month or two later that they could come back.
What's a Wild Goose?
The can line.
Oh, okay.
All right. So the canning machine.
Critical piece of gear right now, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, that was a decision that was made, you know, to get that before I was part of this crew. And I'm so glad that they were already committed to doing beer in cans, or at least in some kind of container. Because yeah, absolutely. We're doing 0% draft. Every single drop of beer is going either into me or into those cans. but anyways, we absolutely had to hit this deadline to have a beer ready. So I was like, well, okay, shit, that's in like a week and a half. So there was a finite array of beer styles to choose from.
Okay. So you were under pressure.
I just was like, all right, let's do like something really simple. I used the 090, the San Diego Super. Mm-hmm. We didn't use that at Eagle Rock, but at my friend that had Hop Secret, we used it there. And the thing's usually, you know, pretty quick, drops out really nicely, really clean, pretty. It's pretty tolerant of, you know, temperature and pH and anything else. So we just did kind of like a sort of like a generic golden ale. And my employers have been great. They were like, all right, you know, like no pressure, just make a beer for the sake of like getting it into the tank and like getting this machine going. So, you know, cool. And like, no pressure, just do whatever. And if it's a throwaway beer, fine. At least the machine will be up and running. Then, everything went crazy, with like social unrest and, police, you know, brutality and whatever. So all of a sudden the beer that was going to be the throwaway beer was like, oh, let's make this a Black Lives Matter donation. Like, we're going to do this thing. And I was like, whoa, you just said this beer was a throwaway beer. Now it's going to be like potentially the most important thing that we do. Like, okay.
No pressure.
It ended up being the case that we didn't get the sleeved cans in time. So we got the BLM cans later. I got to rebrew the beer.
Okay.
The one you're drinking essentially is the same beer, but not dry hopped at all. Okay. So when I got to rebrew it the second time to go into the other cans, I did like a tiny, tiny, like half a pound per barrel dry hop with Citra and Mosaic, which is not in this one, but it is in the, I don't know if I sent you the BLM one. And interestingly, it's like, it's a totally different beer. I like them both. The not dry hopped version is just, it's almost like a, it's so clean. It's almost like a Munich Helles. I mean, I wouldn't say that's what it is, but maybe stylistically that's the, like the,
that's what you would enter it in or something.
I mean, I wouldn't, but yeah. Almost, you know, like it's just like it's super easy drinking, really clean. And that's the very first beer we made. Like that's the first beer off of that equipment. I just sort of like guessed what, you know, efficiency might look like and what everything else would look like. So I think it's held up really well. I mean, I brewed that in the beginning of March and here we are. So I'm pretty proud of that thing.
That was the first beer on that kit that you sold to the public.
Yeah, that was the first beer. I'm still like, this system is weird. I still can't quite get the mash efficiency I'm expecting, but I'm working on that. And then I did throw away a beer not too long ago because this kettle gets really hot, like real fucking hot. If you crank it up to like 100%, it will still be boiling like 5 minutes into your whirlpool. Like it just gets so hot. So there was a beer that we added a bag of dextrose. It was just me for a long time, but now I kind of have like a sort of assistant brewer. We added very carefully a 50-pound bag of dextrose to the end of the boil, like after the burner was off, knocked out, like, everything was cool, pitched the yeast. And then he was up on the brew deck spraying out the kettle and he's like, oh, dude. And I was like, what? And there was just this huge, like, black cake, like all the dextrose. And at Eagle Rock, we had a steam fired kettle, so that was never an issue. I mean, you could literally just throw it right in, no problem. It went straight to the bottom, spread out, and just
creme
brulee. Blackened. Wow. So, of course, like I went to the fermenter and took a sample and I was like, oh, that didn't taste right.
No.
But we had already pitched yeast and, so I figured, well, let's ferment it out and see how it tastes. And man, that was maybe like the fifth or sixth beer that I did. It tasted a lot like if you've ever smelled Hatch chili when they're roasting it. Like,
yep. Oh, yeah.
Just like that. Excuse me. In fact, maybe in the right beer, like in some, you know, like 30 Play-Doh Imperial Stout, maybe the burnt sugar, like maybe would be okay. But that was supposed to be like a 7% hazy IPA type of thing. Like
all I heard was experimental beer.
Yeah. You're probably better off anyway, honestly.
That experimental beer went right down the drain.
Well, let me ask you about this Kolsch, man, because it doesn't taste Kolschy. But it also does at the same time. Oh, it's
so, you know, like Kolsch is kind of a lie in a sense too, because we knew we were going to rebrew it again and do the BLM can, and the BLM can said golden ale.
Yeah.
So I felt like we couldn't call this golden ale and call the other one golden ale. So we're like, well, what do we call it? So maybe it's kind of like a cop out, but we called it California Kolsch because it's
reminiscent of a Kolsch. I mean, you could.
I mean, it's clean. It's clean like a Kolsch.
It's clean.
In fact, I think a lot of Kolsch yeasts are a little more estery than that.
But so, you still have some, and I don't, I'm imagining it's from the hops, because that San Diego super yeast is fairly clean as well too.
Yeah.
So is it your hop selection? What hops are in this?
That one's like nothing until Whirlpool, or just a little tiny Mosaic and Citra edition. Okay. And then the only thing for the other version, same beer, little Whirlpool edition, no 60 minute, nothing else. And then, you know, like a modest dry hop. Also with the with that beer on the dry hop, I added the Beerzyme hop flower, which is a amylo glucosidic ace. So essentially,
one of those ALDC kind of.
Yeah. So the idea is you're trying to free up some aroma compounds, and right. I've been playing around with that. I think in the beers with a bigger dry hop charge, maybe it doesn't matter as much, but I think on the beers where there's just like really like light-handed dry hop and you use that enzyme, like it actually does kind of bring up the aromatics.
Well, how does it do that? Because I never used that before.
I've never even heard
it's a similar idea to where like a lot of people are like, oh no, you gotta dry hop during active fermentation so that you get this like biotransformation.
Yeah, and the biotransformation.
But allegedly there's not like, if the enzyme is yeast derived, there's not enough to really do the job. So the idea is you just, you know, literally like throw some more right in. So it's supposed to like, you know, like similar to like an enzyme you might add to the mash to like start breaking down starches. You're supposed to be breaking apart things that will result in more hop aromatics.
Okay.
I think it works, at least in some of the beers, but at the same time, like the ones that I've used it in, I haven't also done like a side-by-side version where I didn't use it. So can I really say it did anything? No. But you know,
you put it in this beer, in the California Kolsch.
No, I didn't do it in the Kolsch. I did in the dry hopped version, I guess I didn't send you. So I don't know why we're talking about it anyway.
Fun to talk about the enzyme though. That's a good conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea.
The beer is great, man. This is a, Nate, I think you would really dig this. It is that
sounds
like
awesome.
high perfume malt character with those crisp, you know, almost, I don't say tart because then you think, oh, well maybe it's a pH thing, whatever. But that kind of crisp hop, citrus, you know, flavor.
Yeah, I like I mean, this one was not obviously dry hop, but it doesn't sound like it needed it. There was still hop character coming through, even though it was, from what I understand, yeah, Lee, you were saying it's only a Whirlpool edition, no 60
degree
edition.
And that wasn't right? Like the 175 degree, like cool Whirlpool. That was just regular, like, well, it's right. Actually on that kettle, it still reads 213 degrees, because it's so hot. But, yeah.
What's the name of the beer? What's the name of the beer?
Sorry, we didn't really give it a name. We're just calling it California Kolsch, and that's California Kolsch.
What's the label look like?
It's just a little sticker.
Oh, I like that.
It's like the pilot run of the whole thing.
It looks like the California flag.
So it went into blank cans because that was all we could get. Like, in fact, we didn't even get the full
label
cans we were supposed to get. Like, I had to run out and pick up in my little pickup truck, like a partial pallet of 12 ounce.
I'm glad you bring that up. I'm hearing from folks that cans have become kind of difficult to get unless you already have them in some context. Like,
I mean, like I can't necessarily speak to that yet. Like I keep hearing that as well. So far I haven't said, hey, can I have such and such? And they're like, nope, don't have it. Also though, we're doing 12 ounce cans, which not a lot of other breweries are doing, but like a ton of like carbonated water, soda, et cetera, other breweries are doing. So that's good. Sully, you guys are in 12 ounce.
We're in 12 and 19 twos, but you're exactly right. I mean, you know, 16 ounce cans are hard to get right now, especially for the can van folks, you know, out there who are doing like, you know, going up to the smaller breweries and packaging that way. But aluminum is a challenge. I mean, we have contracts because of course we do. But we talked to a lot of people about it, from small breweries to large breweries, and everybody's having the same thing. I mean, we're getting like 25 to 30% of our allocation a week on it. And so it's like, we can't fill orders because of it. So, because everybody's pivoted to cans. So,
yeah, I mean, That's kind of weird too, because I mean,
if you're not having a problem, that's great. And I think you're right, because you're using 12-ounce cans, and that's just a format.
If we were doing bigger volume, it would certainly be an issue. I think we're just lucky so far that it's. I mean, we'll maybe do like the half size pallet, like one of those a week. So it's like, it's not a huge quantity. Otherwise I think we would have an issue, and it would suck too, because like we just got started, so we don't have anything contracted. Like it's just, you're just kind of out there on the free market. So
you're like, hey, can you give me some cans? Anybody got any cans?
Yeah. I will say though, one tiny silver lining of all this is like, I can get hops. I didn't think we were going to be able to get. Yeah, exactly. Especially if you just call them up and you're like, hey, I mean, I only need like, can I get like a 44 pound box? Like, and they're like, oh yeah, no, there's a fair amount of people that are.
Yeah. Do you need, can I send you hops if you want?
You can have. So that's pretty cool. I mean, at the same time, I feel guilty because I know somebody probably already committed to that and now they can't use it because they just can't use it. So
they're just not at the production levels they thought they would be.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that, because our guest on the last show was Imperial in Brentwood out here. Mm-hmm. And Vito, the brewer there, was talking the same exact thing. He's like, yeah, I can get hops that I'm not contracted for, because number one, we're new. They just opened as well. So I do want to chat with you about that a little bit. Cool. But he said the same thing. It's just people can't do the production that they allocated for last year. And so they're happy to, you know, do some selling off.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's cool. At the same time, you're kind of getting what you're getting. It's not like you went up there and did selection and you're like, oh, this is my Citra. This is not like anybody else's. But, you know, I mean, it makes beer. So there's that. Yeah.
It's better than not having a Citra at all, probably, or hopefully.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, you know, so.
It's Citra that smells like peanut butter, but it's Citra.
I mean, it said Citra on the box. That's all I know.
So when did you officially open?
Wasn't that long? We've been selling beer to go for what, about 5 or 6 weeks now. So that's a good question.
Thanks, man.
Originally, you know, like every brewery project that you've ever talked to with anybody that's ever been on this show.
Yeah.
We didn't open when we thought we would open. it took substantially longer.
Okay.
The bulk of this
equipment. And more money.
And so you had to wait for a pandemic to start first, then you open.
And then it got easy.
Yeah.
Actually, there's some good stories there too. Most of this equipment was sitting in a empty building down the street for like 2 years. And then came on. I had been talking to them for a while, but I came on officially like end of February. And originally they thought this was going to be open in March, and thank God it wasn't. I mean, we would have just spent all the money on the outdoor, like beer garden. We would have built the bar, built the fridge, bought all the furniture, trained a bunch of people, hired a bunch of people, et cetera, et cetera. So like, if this had to happen, I guess it happened at the right time, because I'm still technically really the only employee. I mean, I have help here and there for certain things, but I'm really the only one on payroll. So
yeah, that would have been a lot uglier if there was a whole payroll. No, I mean,
it would have slipped. Like you would have blown the whole cash load, and then like, hey, also we have landlords, but they've been cool. Like,
cool.
We're not really paying rent because we're not really open. So that could be worse as well.
That's very nice. That's very
so
nice.
So for us, it's not so bad, but I mean, you know, the people that sucks for are the ones that have been open maybe not 10 years, but like a couple years, still kind of figuring it out, still trying to make the money work. And then all of a sudden you like remove all their revenue streams and like, that's fucked up. So, kind of lucked out there. Just beer to go. And then as of like 2 or 3 nights ago, finally they were like, due to the efforts of the Brewers Guild and everybody else, they said we were going to get to open. So I don't know exactly what our timeline is going to look like on that. I know we're like, obviously we want to do it as soon as we can. One of the owners here has a bar in Highland Park called Block Party, the super cool, like good vibe, fun place. And the spot next to them that opens to their same patio opened up. So they put like sort of permanently parked a food truck in there. There's no way, like in LA especially, like there's no way you were going to build a new kitchen from start to finish in like probably less than 2 years.
Really?
But the idea was, if you park the truck in there and that counts as a kitchen, then you can have food. And so the bar is like sort of a restaurant now. And because they share the same patio, like you can do that. So I think we're going to sort of copy that model. I don't think we're going to build the original like outside cold box and bar that we originally were going to build. I think we're going to use that spot for a truck or for the sort of like food partner component of the thing. Where the beer will get, again, going back to the idea that you're not going to be able to walk up and just hang out at a bar anytime soon. I guess all the beer will sort of be pre-poured, maybe in here, probably inconveniently right where I'm sitting now. So that it's and then, you know, it'll be sort of like a table service scenario where you have to kind of manage all the humans. I don't even know if you can let people go to the bathroom of their own free will or if they have to ask for permission or how that's going to work.
But like having kids.
I hope they have to be escorted. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
So the first time you guys will be open for people coming in from the public will be during this pandemic. You've never.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. So.
Like, that'll be just kind of a trip, you know? You have not crazy, talked to people on the show, done that. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, crazy. I feel like. The good news is if it works during a pandemic, it should hopefully still work post-pandemic.
Right.
If there is such a thing.
Now, right. If people want to go there now, they're going to want to go there afterwards.
Like, the to-go thing has been cool. Like, the first week was fucking bonkers. But then again, it's like, you know, it was a new thing and people were bored. So, like, first week was awesome. Subsequent weeks have been good, but, like, not anything like the first week. But it's been okay. So, we've been doing... Saturday, like all day, and then Wednesday afternoons, you can pre-order and prepay, or you can just show up and whatever. So that's been cool. It's sort of weird, like now that we're finally allowed to be semi-open, it feels surreal because like I've been working on this for a minute, and everything's been so weird. Like in the beginning, as we were talking about on the break, like we moved this equipment in here. Right at the end of February. So like it was an empty space, moved the stuff in, had some equipment issues, like went to turn on the chiller and that was an epic disaster.
Really?
Shooting everywhere. No. And there were a few other things. There were a few quality control issues with other pieces of equipment. But it was like me and the contractor or me and the plumber or me and the electrician, the owners all are like engaged in other businesses as well. And they've got families, they've got stuff going on. So it didn't really make sense for them to be down here, especially when nobody understood what the hell was happening right. Or how you get this thing or what was going on. So it didn't really make sense for them to be here. So it was just me like forever. Wow. It was like just me and whoever else was like doing something that day. And it was kind of cool. I mean, I definitely, even though I don't own the place, I feel like it's mine because like I
sure
even though some decisions like the length of the floor drain and some other things were made prior to my there's some things that could have been like optimized but it's been cool. And I mean honestly I felt really lucky to be employed in a time where a lot of people weren't. My wife manages to like incredibly like high volume divey cave like bars, Footsie's and another one over by Dodger Stadium called the Shortstop.
Oh wow.
And like literally like the Shortstop is the last place you want to go right now. Like on opening day, they would sell tens of thousands of dollars worth of $1 PBRs. Like there were just that many humans moving in and
doing
out.
A lot of that.
So you can see how like she hasn't been working a whole lot. But you know, we've got two kids, so she's been doing that all the time. Like we're doing Zoom, ETK. I don't know how versed you guys are in.
Personally, not at all yet.
So there's kindergarten, right?
Yeah.
But there's also TK, which is transitional kindergarten.
Isn't
but Tama can't do that one because his birthday lands exactly on the like wrong day.
Okay.
So we have to do ETK, whatever the fuck that is. I don't even know.
It's
like, it's one of many versions of pre-kindergarten. But so he like sits in front of the computer for a little while in the morning and kind of does that. And I mean, for the most part, it works. I think we lucked out and got like good teacher who kind of understands how to like keep them engaged. But
my wife's about to lose it. It sounds like she'd rather go sell $1 PBRs. Sometimes
actually, I'd like to have a PBR right now. Actually,
yeah, me too. Dude.
$1 PBR would be amazing.
I would crush a couple of those for sure. Yeah. I mean, here's $6. I'll take the situation.
So, Lee, you're like the only guy there right now.
Yeah, I am literally the only human being here.
It is going to be weird when things start ramping up. I would imagine you're going to feel like one of those lost tribes of the Amazon. We're like, why are you bothering me with your cell phone cameras?
Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say like, you know, I will say this, that stainless steel is porn for brewers. And the whole time I'm looking at this amazing array of this pipe fence behind you and beautiful piping and all this. And I might be doing that, but I won't say it out loud because I have a business and I don't want to like something to happen. But HR, hello. Who built your system and all that? I mean, what's going on there? Tell me a little bit about your system. Well, because
SS Brewtech, who for a long time were just sort of in the homebrew equipment game.
So
And then the guy that owns that company, they also own I think it's called Refuge in Temecula. So I guess they just decided, I think they looked at like Premier and other like small systems and figured, hey, like we could do this. So they got into that arena. It's mostly been good.
How big is it? What's the setup? What is it like?
It's 10 barrels. So we have like 4 20 barrels and 2 10 barrels and a 20 barrel Bright. I started off just doing 10 barrels into every container because I figured we didn't need like hundreds of barrels of beer in this pandemic scenario. Lately I've been doing like, it's a 10 barrel kettle, but it'll hold like almost 18 barrels. So like if a half pallet of 12 ounce cans is 10 layers, 389 cans per layer. If I do like 14 and a half barrels pre-boil, I can end up with just the right amount of beer to like fill that pallet of cans. So I've been doing that on the not super hoppy beers. On the hoppy beers, I've figured like, well, let's just do like half a pallet of cans and then we'll rebrew the beer and do it again. But anyways, the equipment has mostly been good. It's kind of like Premier. Like it's definitely mostly fabricated in China and then they do some stuff here. It's been a few. Yeah,
what is it? Is it 2 vessels? It looks like you have a rake system on your 10 barrel system.
Mash tun with a rake, but it doesn't lift up, which to me is like kind of weird that you can't get it up. Because it would be nice if you could lift it up and then occasionally stir just the top portion without like disrupting the whole thing, but you cannot. And then, just like a big kettle. The HLT almost burned down the place and they came up and promptly fixed that. I think
Gas or steam? What is it?
The kettle is
you're talking about that. You're talking about HLT is what?
Let's see. The HLT is there.
The hot liquor tank. Okay, just went up.
So that's electric.
Because Jason doesn't know what you're talking about.
No, I have no idea. Look, I'm still trying to work out that math equation that Lee gave us 2 minutes ago.
So there are like massive, massive stainless steel heating elements in that HLT. And you can take groundwater from like, 70 to like 180, like pretty fast. But
so it's a nuclear option is what it is.
Yeah, there's like a little radioactive core in
reactor
there.
In there
from China.
Somebody landed the wires into one of the contactors poorly. I think they got a bunch of the fiberglass insulation up in there. So like, you know, anytime you don't have good electrical contact, you start making heat.
Yeah.
So I was heating water. We had just finally gotten like a dumpster and a recycle bin. So I was excited because I had like mountains of cardboard and shit just like saved up. So I was outside putting
Kindling.
Cardboard and doing stuff.
I love recycling too.
Cool. I strolled back in here and I just took one whiff and I was like, holy shit, something is.
That's not right.
Moments away from being on fire. So I opened up, there's like an electrical cabinet under this hot liquor tank. And yeah, one of the contactors and the wires going in were just like before my eyes, just like turning browner and browner. Oh, I was like, oh, fuck. Turn it off. Still actually ran it after the fact with the other. So there's like multiple sets of elements. So you can, there's a little circuit breaker in there. You can isolate everything. So I ran it fine with the remaining good bits. And then, yeah, they came up and fixed that like right away. I did have one other issue with the kettle's burner. I feel like it's an overly complicated design. There's two valves. One controls airflow. One controls gas. And they kind of have to work in harmony. Well, they quit working in harmony. And I had a kettle full of wort and like no fire. It works halfway through. We got to a boil before I had collected all the wort, so I like tried to turn it down, and then it just never came back on. That one we fixed over FaceTime, and like, you know, the customer support has been good.
That's good.
But there have been a few things that I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, you almost burned the place down. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, a little bit.
Everything else, like fermenters, are kind of like standard, like very similar to everything else you see that's mostly manufactured. And although one thing is weird, there's two temperature probes, one in the cone, one up top. And in the 10 barrels, they're both in thermal wells. But in the 3 barrels, the bottom probe is in a thermal well. The top probe is not in a thermal well. Like it goes into the tank. Which I didn't realize at first till I went to like start cleaning fermenters. I was like, dude,
oh, whoops.
There's this like crazy spot where if you don't know it's there, like if you just run your normal CIP without taking it apart and spraying it out, like you're going to have like 3 years worth of shit just hanging out in this weird, like, why would you do that? I'm sure the design as it is, the probe is probably more accurate and more responsive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would rather maybe be off by a few degrees in my
clean
and not have to like,
right.
Because also
it's
like
called house character.
Well, I crammed all the fermenters together because I didn't realize I was going to have to climb under them and get this probe out and clean it. You know what I mean? Like I would have left a little more room if I had known that it was this sort of weird, like, I don't know. It's something I've never encountered
before. Yeah. If it's funky, just tell me. I'm not even mad. Just tell me so I can plan to be funky.
I mean, you know, so far so good. Knock on wood. I don't know.
All right. What else should I open, man? I got the Nanas and the Destroyer of Worlds.
Maybe the Destroyer. So the Nana, we're going to do like a lot of seltzer because like,
yeah, you guys are. I saw that on Party Water.
So one of the owners.
I
mentioned Block Party, his other bar, and like he's been in the like sort of cocktail. Like he's a big part of the LA cocktail scene. Also a big part of like the LA like vegan food scene. So all the beer, it's a selling point that all the beer is vegan. But at the
is
same
that Tony? Time,
is it no? His name's Jason. Jason Eisner.
Okay. Just saying.
It's funny to me because most beer, I mean, it's inherently vegan unless you like use isinglass,
right?
Or like table sugar, like refined white table sugar is not vegan.
That's not vegan. Why isn't that not vegan?
They use bone ash to make it white.
Oh, bone ash.
but like normal, like dextrose is fine. Like, and you may, you're probably just going to order a bunch of bags of dextrose from whoever you get your malt from anyway.
ADM.
So. But anyway, our sort of initially I was kind of like, oh, you want to make seltzer? Like
you, okay. Ooh. Keep going. I'm going to be like Trump right now. Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. but you know, I kind of look at it a little differently now. with Jason's background in like, you know, cocktails and mixology and all of that, like he makes really like bonkers, like weird, cool cocktails. I mean, rather than like replicating Mango White Claw or whatever is already out there.
Mango.
Most, if not all of the cocktails, all of the seltzers are going to be sort of like a session version of a cocktail. So the very first one we did, the bitters and soda, the inspiration there was the first time my wife was pregnant, she didn't want to let the rest of her bar staff and employers know she was pregnant until she was ready. So
I did
every
that once.
Time we went out, it was just bitters and soda because there's virtually no alcohol in there, but there's flavor and there's color and it looks like you're drinking a cocktail. Hmm. So she drank a lot of bitters and soda and it kind of grew on me. Like I actually, it's like a refreshing, cool drink. So when we started talking about seltzers, I was like, well, what if we, I mean, your background is cocktails. Like, what if we kind of like, let's make like a session version of like a Moscow Mule or, you know, rather than making those like super neutral, fruity, kind of boring ones. And I mean, the first one we did, which is the Nona's, it's literally dextrose and water and some lactic acid to take the pH down. Like I was really surprised with how much character it had, like for being just a bunch of, you know, bags of fermented corn sugar. To me, it tasted a lot like if you were drinking.
What kind of yeast did you use?
On that one, I used the San Diego Super with they sell it now. There's they have like a nutrient called Seltzer Max.
Yeah.
But at the time, Kara from White Labs was like, "Hey, we're working on this new," because before what people were doing was using like the Turbo Vodka yeast, which comes with its own nutrient. And I guess White Labs' idea is like, well, if we come up with this new nutrient, you can use your like house strain and just give it a ton of this nutrient and it'll ferment like fairly clean.
Without having to maintain a separate pitch or anything like that.
Well, you know what though? I do have one. We'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Good one. Weird, good talking.
No, no. I think it totally like with the San Diego Super, it was a little bit sulfury, but otherwise like it was to me surprisingly clean. It had a little bit of like a, like if you took a glass of Prosecco and like put ice cubes in it, mm-hmm. and then kind of like drank the Prosecco, let the ice melt and then drank that.
Yep.
You just got like a little bit of like sort of like diluted white wine character. Like to me, that's kind of what it tastes like. And it was not off, but like it was actually, I thought it was pretty good. And then we were going to do like other things to it. So I have a lenticular filter with this big charcoal cartridge that I was planning to use.
That's good for seltzer.
But so far we haven't used it because I actually kind of like that sort of like weird.
What's a lenticular filter?
The crafty element?
Yeah. Lenticular filter is just like a big like stainless steel housing with a big, rather than doing like the old school plate and frame where like you've got a bunch of filter pads exposed to air, like this is all contained in a sort of expensive stainless steel housing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I gotcha.
But
yeah, Jason, come on.
We bought it, but I haven't actually used it yet because I sort of liked what was going on with we did another seltzer that's sort of like a pog, like a, you know, a passion fruit orange guava thing. That one I used the White Labs Coastal Haze blend. That's got like the Brett Brooks, or not the, it's not the Brett Brooks, it's the Sac Brooks. It's the Saccharomyces that they thought was a Britannomyces. Yeah, and then it's got a few other like other attenuators in there. I used that for the tiki seltzer because I already had a pitch of it and I was thinking like, okay, well, if this is supposed to like accentuate those tropical flavors, like let's try it in a tropical seltzer.
Sounds good.
Probably wouldn't do it again. Like it's not bad, but there's something about it. And I also used like a bunch of pineapple, passion fruit and orange puree like in the fermenter just to sort of, my thinking is like if you're allowed to use sugar as a malt substitute and you're allowed to use fruit puree, like why not make something that's almost like wine and like technically has no malt in it at all, but it has all these other fermentables, and like, let's just see what we can get. It did produce a pretty interesting seltzer. A lot of the best flavor, like, fermented right out. Like, if you would, you know, you taste it every day and you're like, oh, this is really good. Oh, it's not as good. Like, oh, like, eventually most of it went away. So when I moved into the Bright, I added some more sort of like purees that are a little more like extract, just to like have a little bit of flavor that would stay put.
Yeah.
But it's been like, it's kind of fun to play with. I don't like hate it as much as I was like, oh, no, we're not making.
You're okay with it now. Is it selling?
It sounds cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, people are into it. It might sell better if it was mango or, you know, whatever, but I like the idea of doing something that everybody's not already. I mean,
yeah,
we're certainly never going to produce Mango White Claw at a price point that makes any sense compared to Mango.
But your tap room, it might be good. I mean, it's a good option if you can do that. I mean, you know,
that's a good point. That's totally valid.
Well, I mean, crafts,
but like the you know, so like
support you.
And it sounds like you're making it crafty too. So that's an element of that. That's a unique selling part too. Absolutely. Is that, you know, it's something that's like a little bit different than what's out there in the
marketplace. So far they've been really well received. So
I'm talking you up here. I'm trying to help you out here.
Let me go get a cold Nona. I have a warm one here, but let me go get a cold one.
So, yeah, that's the one that's like the pregnancy decoy.
I can't wait for it. Let me go grab
what's Jason
it.
Doing right now?
He's gonna go get a cold version of what he wanted to take.
He's been drinking warm beer. That guy's hardcore.
Well, I think he took him out, and then they started to get warm. But
look who we're talking about here.
Exactly. So, a question for you, Lee: when you make seltzer with the White Labs nutrient and your house yeast, whatever house yeast you happen to have on hand at the time, sounds like you've been through a couple recently, based on kind of what you're doing. Would you probably wouldn't repitch that into something like an IPA. Would you repitch into anything else, like another seltzer?
That's exactly the question I want to have answered. Is like, I mean, you're right. I wouldn't pitch it into something with complex sugars.
Right.
But I don't see why you couldn't repitch it in another seltzer. However, maybe I don't want to be the guinea pig.
Right.
So I haven't done it yet. I am curious about that. And to circle back on this idea of like, it really does make sense to use this nutrient and use a yeast that you already have an abundance of. But I mean, the seltzer could inherently be like a gluten-free beverage, but if you're repitching yeast for beer,
that's true. Then technically you're kind of crossing streams there, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean,
to the Ghostbusters. You know?
Yeah, like, there you go. Thank you for bringing it back.
I've been telling the guys like, hey, don't call it gluten-free. I mean, I even wonder too, like, I mean, certainly I think you can run your kettle and heat exchanger through, if you can't get the gluten out of there, then you probably also can't get whatever will ruin your beer out of there. Right. So like, I think you can get the kettle and the heat exchanger and your wort lines sufficiently clean to produce a like gluten-free product.
Well, you could call it like crafted to reduce gluten, but if you want to call it gluten-free, you have to take it out to a third party lab. You have to go through those scenarios. You have to, like,
and you're also opening yourself up to that, like that level of liability. Yeah, I don't think, unless you were strictly a gluten-free facility.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes sense to try to do anything above and beyond like gluten reduce. The problem there though is that like the test for gluten free and gluten reduced, well, for gluten reduced, like it's a tighter test and it's not very accurate. So you could in theory produce a beverage that tests okay, but it might still make somebody ill.
Yeah.
And that's not my objective. So I think, that's the thing. It's sort of the way they put the disclaimer on, like, you know, this was produced in a facility that packages milk and nuts.
And
whatever else. I think you just have to say, like, It's mostly fine, but you know, if you've got a real problem, then
well, you overexplain it. We do the same thing. We put out a seltzer and we do some other stuff like that, and like, and it's all made on like, you know, equipment that makes beer. So yeah, we have to, we go through this big explanation and say we've tested it, it's at this level, but we don't test every batch. It's like craft or reduce gluten, which is a key, you know, it sort of telegraphs the consumer that, you know, you're doing your best. But if you're like hardcore, then, you know,
yeah, if you've really,
maybe you need to, you need to like pull it back a little bit and like, okay, maybe you don't want to have this, but
yeah.
But that's up to them. I mean, there is some onus on everything.
You know, we did, so that the Nonas, we do have a girl here who is like, she's not like diagnosed as officially celiac, but I think she is. She could have that seltzer. It was fine. But I gave her a little bit of a beer that we used Clarex in, which in theory can like break gluten down and reduce it to pieces that don't hurt you. And that didn't work.
Fucked her up.
That sent her straight to the bathroom.
Straight to the bathroom.
It's nice to have an in-house guinea pig.
Here, try this. Tell us what happens.
So the seltzer, I think also it may partly depend on your pitching practices. Like if you're doing like a cone to cone transfer and you're not totally sure like when it goes from like really dense slurry to like not so good, like maybe you're just sending extra gluten in there that doesn't need to be there. Maybe if you have more sophisticated harvesting and repitching techniques, like maybe you could kind of mitigate that. I don't know.
Yeah,
this is a pretty small place, so I can't get too can't get too fancy with it.
Yeah, this Nonas is great. So it's just, what kind of bitters is it? Like Angostura?
Well, we can't. Yeah, it's supposed to be like Angostura, but we can't like literally just like dump Angostura bitters in there. So Jason has like a bunch of like cool, like, you know, like homemade bitters recipe. So it's like, I guess Angostura bitters, I think the biggest flavor contributor there is gentian, however you say gentian.
I don't know.
So it's like, it's,
I think that's how you say it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Shenyin. It's Shenyin.
But yeah, that was the idea. And I think we may do a series of soda waters, party waters that are just different kinds of bitters. Cause, you know, there's like a huge flavor array of bitters.
Oh yeah.
So that might be a thing.
This is really cool. So, and there's no alcohol in here, or is it very, very little?
Well, no, I mean, it's a hard seltzer. So there's, it's like 5%. Yeah. So there's actually,
come on, Jason, it's a hard seltzer.
You can drink it and drive around. No problem. You're fine. Hard,
you can play D&D. You're fine.
Yeah.
There's more alcohol than there would be if it was literally just soda water and bitters. Cause I mean, the bitters are like 40%, but there's like 3 drops of them. So like, you know, you're not really taking too much of a payload there.
I've never heard of a bitters and soda before, but I think I might just drink it. And
that's a digestive.
Well,
you know, it's like, it's something like that's nice to have like an actual bitters and soda when like you want the bubbles to kind of help. Yeah. Like you said, like a digestive, like to kind of help.
No, Lee, a digestive.
Sorry, digestive or digestive. like when you want, it's sort of like when you don't want like a fucking 9.5% imperial something. You're like, dude,
every fucking day.
Do you have a beer that's like less than 4? Like, cause I want the bubbles and I want the sensation of consumption. I just don't want to be fucked up.
Like, so, you know, like everybody, I'm trying to reduce I'm realizing I'm drinking more now than ever before.
Yeah, you are. Yeah,
I'm trying to reduce that. And I've been chugging a lot of soda water, just straight soda water. And like,
yeah, so you just need a few drops. So, you're there.
Now I know. And I have a bunch of bitters. I have like some tiki bitters. I have some orange bitters would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Angostura and shit. So I'm going to fuck around. And I appreciate that. You know, the hard seltzer thing, I don't know. There's some good ones out there and there's some weird ones out there. But I appreciate that they're lower alcohol. That's what I never really understood about hard seltzer. It's like, why are we making it 7%? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get that. Also, at 7%, you're going to taste the ethanol. Like, I mean, unless you just, like, I don't know, just can't taste anything. In the like 4.5 to 5% range, I think it's like kind of concealable, but as it gets strong, same thing with like the hard kombucha. I've had some really enjoyable ones that are in the like the more moderate ABV range, but then like it's suddenly like 7 or 8%. I'm like, this just tastes like weird. Like, this is like not good.
Isn't White Claw making a hard, a stronger version?
I think, aren't White Claws like already 7%? And first of all, are your seltzer 7%? Did I just insult you?
You have a few times, but no, it's 4.6.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, all right.
Thank you. Thank you for paying attention. Thank you for paying
attention. Also, like, it's a weird thing.
Sponsor the show.
No laws, Jason. No laws.
Something that's like 5% alcohol sells just fine, but like once it's like 4.9%, like it sells more slowly. You're like, really? Like, you're concerned about that 0.1, that tenth of a percent?
The
like,
yeah, which is five is like the threshold. I mean,
it's like if it's 4.9, just lie and say it's 5 because it's going to sell so much. Just it's 5. I mean,
it's like that 7% IPA, like that 7% IPA that will just sell like crazy. So if you have one at 6,
personally, I love IPA.
6.9 is like, you know, value added proposition.
I think 6.5% on a West Coast IPA is like the perfect.
I agree.
Totally.
But I guarantee you, you'll sell it almost twice as fast if it's 7.
Yep.
And it's not that anybody really knows, like, they're just shopping by ABV. That's it.
Some people do that, especially old men.
As someone who does that, I've definitely looked at a board and seen a beer that's 5% and then seen a same style that's 4.9, and I will take the 4.9.
Oh, absolutely. In a second.
Because I'm mentally
the lowest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're that way.
I agree.
It's true. You're not wrong. Lee, let's take a quick break, man, and we're going to come right back. We have this hazy to talk about, and then we'll probably let you go.
All right.
We're going to fire you. Your bosses have called us and given us fire. And
I'll be right back.
Turn the compressor off and pee.
I did.
All right. Okay. Hang on, everybody.
Settle down. I'm just asking.
Session. We'll be right back.
Tuned into this session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. It's the session. We're hanging out with Lee Bukowski from Party Beer Company in Los Angeles, California. And we're sort of wrapping up the bitters and soda segment, which is really all I'm calling it, but it's mainly like a hard seltzer thing. But I have this book. It's a Trader Vic's bartender's guide from 1950, whatever. And it's tons of these classic cocktails that nobody's ever heard of anymore because nobody drinks 2 ounce cocktails anymore, you know, or maybe there's 3 ounces of liquid maximum. And this would be the thing. The bitters and soda would be something like that in there as like a refresher or an aperitif, like you guys were talking about. I've never heard it, but it does speak to me of like being in a dive bar, like a smoky dive bar, and not, you know, I've already had 12 martinis and some bar nuts.
Yeah.
And I need to drive home. So I need to have this to sort of refresh myself.
I think it's like a bartender thing. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I think so. I don't have a ton of experience working, but I mean, I've never worked behind a real, I've worked at a tape, you know, in the tap room, but I've never worked behind like a bar that had liquor. And I think a lot of times, like, you know, you've got well-intentioned patrons who are like, hey, let's have shots. And you're like, oh no, I'm like, I'm working. So I think I think part of the bitters and soda thing is like, it's just enough bitters that it makes the liquid look like,
it looks like a 7 and 7 or something.
Or a shot. So I think it's sort of like the way to like appease the overeager patron, like, oh yeah, I'll do this with you. And then like, you're kind of letting yourself off the, it's like a movie prop, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it actually does taste good and sort of fills a niche as well. So.
And the color's there.
Yeah.
So that's my take on it anyways. I don't know. What do I know?
Speaking of other things, we have Destroyer of Worlds Hazy IPA, and I'm gonna throw this label up on the camera, and I want you guys to look at it. It's pretty fucking amazing.
Oh, that's great.
That's good.
It's a cat shooting laser eyes.
Laser eyes.
Fire everywhere. It's it's rad, man. Who does your label design?
Well, so that's one thing that I don't have to do anymore that I did do at Eagle Rock. All the labels, and I enjoyed doing it. But
yeah. Well, you were good at it. I liked it.
It's also kind of, and I actually have done a couple for them since then. But it's kind of nice to not have to do. Sorry, not have to do that anymore.
What's that? It's
that, is that your ringtone?
Oh, that was my wife. Yeah, I'll get to that one in a minute. I mean, I guess I could, maybe I have to get to that.
What is that? Yeah, why don't you just answer it on the air?
The Miami like club, you know, we the best.
Honey, I'm on the air right now.
Maybe I'll just send her a picture.
That's right.
So anyway,
anyway,
with the she sent me a picture of my kid eating. Oh well, here, I'll share that with everybody. Hold on, how do I do that?
What's he eating? Paint?
I think that's a whole bunch of yogurt.
He's drinking a hazy IPA.
You know what?
I think that's a hazy IPA.
My kid eating yogurt too, just pounding.
I think one thing with like the in the world of like hazy IPA or maybe just like contemporary IPA, I'm kind of interested in the idea of like maybe developing sort of an IPA style that's like unique to this place and not necessarily representative of like, oh, it's a West Coast IPA or it's a New England style IPA or whatever. Like that beer, I mean, it's hazy in appearance, but it's pretty much a West Coast IPA.
It really is, man. Like you can see in the can.
The hazy West Coast IPA.
It's hazy.
I mean, I just like a new style. I don't like when it's murky.
Not
like,
sweet, but bitter.
Like, I do like the idea that maybe you don't need a million IBUs to like have a nice, enjoyable, like crisp beer. But I think it goes back, and maybe that's.
Maybe you need more than single-digit IBUs. That's okay.
For now, like pretty much all we're doing is like Pilsner, West Coast IPA, and Hazy IPA, because that's like what is really easy for us to sell right now. And also, those are beer styles that I do like to drink. But I like the idea of like, okay, it can be Hazy IPA, but like it doesn't need to be like overly viscous or overly murky. Like it doesn't have to be translucent, but it doesn't need to be completely opaque either. Like I want to find the right. And I mean, I think maybe like
brackish.
Brackish. Yeah. You know? Maybe there's a yeast out there that I haven't found yet that is like going to express what I'm like looking for, what I'm talking about. But I don't know. Like that's a work in progress. Like, I feel like with the West Coast IPA, that's kind of like a prescribed, like there's already a sort of a model there for that. Yeah. But with go ahead.
No, I'm just letting you finish. Sorry.
Yeah. I just think with the, like, I don't even want to call it hazy IPA, but with a sort of like contemporary IPA, like I like the idea of less bitterness, more hop aroma, more hop flavor. I don't want anything to be deposited in the glass, like just in that 30 minutes that it took you to drink the beer, like there's anything just like hanging out there. Even like this one I liked, but when I opened up the bright tank after we were done with the cans, I was like, what is all this shit? Like I thought I went out of my way to make sure there was going to be no garbage in here. And like, there's still a fair amount of stuff in here.
There's some smegma, dude.
I feel like that's the work. That's the work in progress for sure.
You know, okay, so as being not a fan of either hazy IPAs or West Coast IPAs.
You've never talked about that before.
Never.
Well, I'm not going to get on my horse. The horse is put out to pasture. So, but I will say that this is a unique combination of the two, because you do have that soft, pillowy, round malt flavor with some of that softer notes of hops. But then you do have a firmer bitterness, and it's not like some of the hazies that I've had where it's just I don't know, edgy or sharp edges poking out everywhere. This has a transition.
No, I appreciate that.
I think
it's actually like a challenging beer style to make, because like if you're not, you know, obviously not filtering it, you're probably not finding it, but like
yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there that needs to get out of there. So does that mean you add like 2 weeks to the overall like production time? Maybe it does, but like 2 weeks is kind of expensive just have it sitting there. So I've also been kind of messing around with doing like really small biofine additions, like maybe, you know, certainly not enough to magically turn it clear. Cause I feel like that's my luck. Like the beer you want to be crystal clear will never be crystal clear.
Right.
But the one that you want to look a little chunky will be the one that just drops bright. Like it looks like a perfectly polished like Pilsner. So I've been messing around with doing like little, like maybe like 25% of the rate that you would normally use, or like just enough to maybe take like the big stuff out and still, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
I think it's a cool thing that you definitely should keep working on. It is unique. It's a unique tasting beer in the space. Can you talk a little bit about how you managed to get this sort of softer, rounder mouthfeel, but then still ended up with a bitter beer?
I mean, just, you know, like you talk to your other friends that are brewers, like, well, how much calcium chloride are you using and what are you doing here and what's the yeast and whatever. So that one is that's the Coastal Haze blend, which I like it, but I think I'm going to stop using it. I also feel like, I mean, and also it depends on your unique like water chemistry.
Absolutely.
That's a concern all the time. A lot of people just like dump a ton of minerals in there for the hazy IPAs. And then you drink and you're like, God damn, like this just, it's like there's like chalk in there, which I shouldn't say chalk because.
But it tastes
chalk, yeah. Maybe something specific, but like just like minerality. So our water here is like pretty shitty.
You're welcome for that.
Do you use RO water?
No, because we don't currently have anywhere to send it. So here's a couple interesting side notes. Originally, there was going to be no hot liquor tank. And I was like, what are you talking about?
How can
you know? Like, you're just going to dump all your chiller water, like, into the drain? We currently don't have a cold liquor tank. So I've been using one of the fermenters as a cold liquor tank because the brew house has, like, so, like, the actual, the wort chiller on the brew house, let me hear, like, is like, you know, this big.
But I can't see it. Pull it back a little further.
And the pre-chiller that's supposed to get the incoming water cold is about this big.
It's very, very tiny.
So it absolutely does not work as advertised, which I told them it wasn't going to work. So one of the six fermenters right now is just cold water because there's no, like, I'm not trying to knock out in like 8 hours. Like I need this process to happen in like maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that. But anyways, what were we talking about?
I have no idea.
We're talking about hard seltzer and bitters. No.
We're just about massive, to start the show.
Massive minerality and how.
Oh yeah.
How weird it is sometimes.
LA is challenging for water. I mean, I grew up in LA, and when I was homebrewing, I would use distilled water and add back because I had those challenges.
Eventually, I should have sent you guys like a schematic of the layout here because it's pretty small. But we do have a pretty big cold box.
Nice.
So eventually I'm going to put a plastic cold liquor tank in the cold box. Not because I'm going to use the cold box to get it cold, but because that's the only space I have left.
It'll help,
I'm just going to like stick it in the corner. The cold box is at 40. Like cold liquor can be at like, I like it around 40 or 42. So at some point when we need that fermenter to be freed up to make more beer, then we'll just put a like one of those weird poly tanks in there with a pump and a controller, and that'll be that. At that point, we could do like, I like the idea of maybe doing like partial RO just to like take the overall mineral load down.
Add it down a little bit. Yep.
At the same time, it's such a wasteful process. Like, I mean, even like the really good ones are like, I think like 4-1 or something. Like you're still dumping a lot of
mineral
laden water into the drain. So maybe there's like a balance in there where it's like,
take you can water your landscape with it.
We could. We just got some palm trees. It's getting
dark. There you go. Palm trees.
Otherwise I would show you a picture of the palm trees, but,
tell me about your hopping for this. How do you go bitter, but not over bitter, but still that firm bitterness?
Well, that one was just like, I've been doing a lot of, like no 60 minute editions, just a Whirlpool edition. I did like, there's a, on the, I don't think I did. I send you the prom pilsner. I guess I didn't send it.
No, you didn't. And now I'm offended.
So that one was
I am too, by the way.
Like 175 degree whirlpool, like take it down, do a much bigger hop edition, whatever. I'm not completely sold on that yet. But the one you're drinking, like no 60 minute edition, just a big like Citra Mosaic at the end, and then in the fermenter, Citra Mosaic and Strata.
I wouldn't think that would impart such a bitterness.
I think it largely depends on the hops, you know, because like if this is like a 15 point whatever alpha acid hop, then like putting that into a whirlpool for 20 or 30 minutes at 210 degrees, like you certainly get a lot of bitterness. Like maybe it's a little bit more than I want.
Is it?
I've been kind of like toying with the idea of maybe using like, there's a lot of cool new like hop extracts. So maybe you do like a little bit of extract so you can still have the ability to use your heat exchanger to bring the wort down a little bit before you knock out. I did on one of the beers, I kind of forgot I did like a Warrior edition at 60 minutes. And then I did the 175 degree whirlpool. And I was like, oh, wow.
You forgot? Like, how did you forget that?
Well, I was.
Wait, what is going on? I feel like you're on a satellite at a brewery.
It's almost like you're there working alone or something. Exactly. What's going on?
I added Warrior hops to the edition.
Like, I do really well when I pick one thing at a time and focus on that. But once I get into the multitasking.
Don't tell your owners that.
So, it was, you know, like it worked, but there was a lot of stuff moving in and out of that heat exchanger. I was like, oh, dude, it's going to take me like 3 weeks of like.
To break that bad boy down.
Or I could open it up, but I don't want to open it up.
That's yet. What I said. Yeah. So I'll just it's like heart surgery.
Just nuke it. Just nuke it down over a couple weeks. It'd be fine.
I mean, you know, like that's what we use really hot water to sanitize it. And that mostly works. So,
well, I mean, I think this is pretty much a unique hazy IPA in the landscape, because again, it does start off like you would think a hazy IPA would, but it does have that bitterness. So is it a conscious thing where you want to hit people in both markets? Of like, you want a bitter IPA, but you want also the juicy thing and you don't know what to do? Or are you just trying to create something?
No, I mean, like, I don't want to sound like cheesy where I'm like, oh, well, you know, we make the beer that we want to drink and then we sell the rest.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, well, especially when I'm the only one here, I'm like, it's only my taste buds. So like,
I don't satellite alone.
Like, yeah, I don't want it to be. I just want to be able to drink a lot of them. Like, if it's too chunky, I can't drink that much of it. If it's too bitter, I can't drink that much of it. If it's, you know, like, if I look at it and visually it's just like off-putting, then I can't drink a bunch of it. So, and I'm sort of extrapolating. I'm assuming that like, well, you know, if I don't hate it, then hopefully the rest of the buying public also doesn't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way to look at it.
What do I know? I don't know anything.
What are you talking about? You sound like me. You're reading my script.
I'm
the self-deprecating brewer. Stop using my line.
Right.
I mean, I'm also not trying to like appease the like lowest common denominator, but like, I don't know. I mean, if you think in your head, like, all right, here's my like maybe like top five favorite beers, which would be a hard exercise to even do it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. We know. Yes. Like, keep going.
Are any of those top five beers the ones where like, well, I can have like 3 ounces and then like, that's it. I'm like, I'm done. Like, no, it's probably beers that you're like, dude, if I had to, I could drink this thing all day. Like,
yes. You're not about a pale ale. Keep going.
So
that's what you want.
It's kind of
El Sully. Keep going. But did I say El Sully? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I'm trying to debate between like Rogue Smoke and Schlenkerlaw right now. I don't know why. Maybe because it's in the air. I don't know. Maybe because we're slowly suffocating up here. But
well, I mean, right now, right about that, like, they cancel out. So if you drink it now, you won't taste any of the smoke.
It's true.
You're gonna finally taste the base beer because smoke times smoke equals, it's like
equals less know, smoke.
Negative, negative, positive. Yeah.
Wait, hold on a second. Can you do the math again for me on the whiteboard?
Four lefts equal right. And that's just
389.
You'll be sprinkling ash in your beer a couple months from now, JP, and there's no smoke in the air.
I gotta get the hit.
Yeah.
Well, Lee, man, you're doing a good job, dude. I think that you've obviously had your challenges. Not only leaving a very successful brewery that you've helped create the brand for, and you know, good friends and stuff like that, but to transition to another brewery that hasn't even been built yet, and then you're sort of there by yourself figuring all this shit out. I think you're doing great.
No, it's great.
Your beers taste are pretty good. Yeah, well, and
it's a great story.
I look forward to the day when you guys can come down here. And,
me too, dude. Damn.
Oh, hell yeah.
Although, actually, you can come down. I'm the only one here. So
actually, we should just, you guys, we're getting in cars. We're going down there.
Do all it. Right. Let's go.
JSX.
Yeah, I mean, even the hazy, like,
like mask up and let's go.
Arms reach, baby. Let's go.
Sounds all right to me.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. I appreciate it. And you sent some of your Mexican lager, your taco cerveza.
I like that one. So, ironically,
what was the yeast you used, by the way?
Well, the first two Pilsners I did, I used Mexican lager because a friend had it, like, available.
Yeah.
So, ironically, on the Mexican lager, I did not use the Mexican lager. I used 3470. And then I did, I did a bag of flaked corn and a bag of... brown rice flakes.
Huh.
And I really like it. To me, like it tastes.
Wait, what was
like,
that brown? What'd you say?
I wanted flaked rice, but they didn't have regular flaked rice. They only had like flaked brown rice.
Brown rice. Okay.
Which is like a little more characterful, but I really like the beer. Like, I mean, I feel like
it. That sounds great. I'd like to try that.
I was thinking in West Texas. Well, I will send some your way. Send me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Coordinates.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. I was about to offer some of mine, but hell no. Now
we're all driving down there tonight anyway. So, I mean, we didn't even have to do that.
Oh, well, then I'll just stay put. That'll be perfect.
Stay there. Wait for us. Don't go home. Kath will understand.
I mean, I've got stuff I can do. That's why I do have to start that D&D game, but, you know, it's fine. I'll probably be wrapping up about the time you guys get here. So it'll be perfect.
That's true. All right, everybody. You can go to partybeer.co. to learn more about Party Beer Company. And of course, they're on Instagram as well. And your Instagram, I was commenting to Nate before the show, it's very hip. You got like a lot of the pastel coloring.
Real
like,
cool, yeah.
Yeah.
All the hip colors.
It's trendy as hell, man.
That's not my department, but I do think it looks good.
Definitely give them a follow, man. It's good stuff.
Well, it was really good to see you guys, man. Thanks for having me. It's been a while.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's been too long, but that's where we are right now.
Well, one of these days we'll do something in person. It'll be splendid.
Man, I can't wait. We're gonna hug so many people. There's Nicole. Speaking of hugging people,
what's Nicole? That was weird. That was like an acid trip right there.
Yeah.
What was that?
All right, guys, go support Party Beer Company, partybeer.co. And of course, don't forget about our other shows like Brew Strong. I'm currently editing several Brew Strong shows at once. So those are going to be up very soon. I have two Dr. Homebrew episodes that should drop, I think, within the next couple of days. So there's that. I'm also going to be doing another live session on Monday for you live listeners. I have no idea who it's with. Bev sent me the information, but I haven't read it yet. But I will be here at 5 o'clock on Monday to talk about some more beer with you guys, too. So check it out. Lee, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. It was very good seeing you.
Thank you, guys. It was great, man. I appreciate it. I will hopefully see you sooner than later.
Absolutely. All right, Lee. Take care, man.
All right. Adios.
Bye, guys.
Guys.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and we